Hei og velkommen til Skifters podcast. Ukens episode spilt inn live hos Selmer advokatfirma. Vi har snakket med founder eller gründer av Revolut Bank, Nick Storonski. Denne episoden ble spilt inn 12. oktober. Vi beklager at det litt dårlig lyd I starten av episoden, men det blir bedre underveis.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this morning session with the Revolut founder Nick Storonski. First of all, I would like to thank Selmer for doing this on a very short notice, and Liv from IKT Norge who put us in contact with them. I also want to do a quick commercial about our own event, The Shift, which is going down the November 14th with world-class speakers like Sean Edels, Yara Paoli, Hugo Pereira, and my colleague Anka is over there, so you can get a good discount on the ticket. But most importantly, thank you, Nikolai, for taking the time to share some insights with us this morning. But before we start, I would like to know who we are dealing with in the crowd. So how many people here work in the bank industry? Okay, about 95%, I don't know. how many fintechs? Oh, so banks are fintechs. Interesting.
You know what's interesting here? So both banks and startups are wearing suits.
Yes. other startups? And consultants? And any other categories? Yeah. Three people other in other. So, Nikolai, you founded Revolut in 2013. But you launched in 2015.
Yes.
It's now valued at $1.7 billion.
Yes.
Yes? Just say yes the entire time. You have 3 million customers. Right. And you claim that you're getting 8,000 new customers each day.
Yeah.
You're Russian-born. You have a degree from in physics from the Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology. You have a master's degree in business. You're a champion swimmer. And you used to work as a trader at the Lehman Brothers when it burst. And after that, you worked for Credit Suisse. Why did you quit your job to start Revolut?
I mean, banking became boring, to be honest with you. So it used to be a very fun industry. And then after financial crisis, it just became extremely political, culture, deteriorated. And a lot of best people, they just quit.
But banks became boring. Have they used to be cool?
Yeah, they used to be cool. If like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if you would go to any graduate event at universities, you'll see like a lot of banks recruiting, you know, best graduates. I think these days are gone now. All best graduates, they go to startups.
So what did you do when you worked at Lehman Brothers?
Trading. So I was a derivatives trader.
Trader. Were you a good trader?
Yeah, very good.
And what is the problem with banks today?
Well, it's I think they became, you know, too political, too big, a lot of corporate layers. I remember when I was working in Credit Suisse, it took me 2 years and I think 14 committees to launch a new product, right? I think it's ridiculous. It's too many committees, too many bosses, too many managers.
And is that what you want to do something with?
Well, I obviously want to have, you know, much flatter structure, which is also meritocratic, right? Because if you look at banks, majority of people there, they're not really producing. So my view, if you half, you know, population in banking world, I mean, nothing would change.
So half of the people working in banks are actually producing something and the other half is not doing it?
I would say only 20% producing something.
Only 20%. Yeah. Interesting. So, in the start, what was your like when you started Revolut? What was your biggest challenge?
Well, it's obviously like, you know, downshifting from a beautiful trading floor to working in a Starbucks, and it was like very different experience compared to trading. And then it took me probably about 1 year to adjust, and then, you know, to find my way.
But what gave you the confidence to do it?
I'm very confident.
And I know that you have got this question before, yeah. But with the geopolitical noisy situation between Russia and the EU, yeah. Have you met any challenges being Russian-born entrepreneur starting a bank in the UK?
To be honest, no. So because I obviously came to UK like 13, 14 years ago, so I'm not really considered Russian anymore. But still, yeah, sometimes I receive these questions. And the reality is we're all kind of, you know, global citizens, right? And we're all travel, we all, you know, live in different countries. So I just don't really understand these types of questions.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit more about banks. You said that you've never seen a big bank do anything cool, because if they did, you wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you still believe so?
Yeah, just because banks, they are not tech companies, right? And I would say banking managers are not designers and engineers. As a result, by definition, they have wrong skill set to produce products. To produce, you know, brilliant products, you need to hire engineers, designers, product owners. If you just hire banking managers, it's the wrong type of skill set.
But the banks have been doing a lot of that lately, recruiting that type of people, starting to move in that direction.
Like, if I'm a brilliant designer engineer, why would I go to work for a bank, right? I'd rather go to work in startup.
Why?
Well, changing the world, you know, all these things.
Yeah, but the banks still have money, right? So they can pay for the best people.
Startups could also pay, right?
Yeah. That's true, but the traditional banks. You said that the traditional banks' approach to innovation and digitalization is wrong. How is that wrong?
Well, what they really do. So I was to speak with a lot of banks. The way they approach digitalization, they just hire, I don't know, McKinsey. McKinsey advised them to build some digital project, and they hire another outsourcing company to design it, another outsourcing company to kind of, you know, develop it. And the result, they spend, like, you know, tons of money, 2 years, produce something, and they never iterate, never improve it. It's just wrong approach. I think, you know, core of banking is tech, and tech needs to be built in-house.
But do you see that are there any banks that are actually approaching the digital transformation in a good way?
Well, if we look at China, well, they're not really banks, but WeChat, Alipay, I think they are doing it in the right way.
What way is that?
Well, it's more approaching banking as a product, not as an organization.
So banking as a product, not as an organization.
Yeah.
So it's a product organization instead of a...
Yes.
Yeah. And what does a product organization look like?
Well, it's obviously at the core is technology, right? Designers, engineers, product owners, a lot of ideas. So they first build the product, and then they figure out how to build it in terms of legislation, and then risk as well.
Yeah. So the incumbent banks have been talking a lot about innovation and also open banking. The last few years, but it's moving slowly. What are your thoughts on open banking?
Well, I think, you know, in a few years' time, it will be great. So far, it's not really usable, I would say, for startups. For example, functionality to pull money out of bank account with open banking APIs just doesn't have, you know, a very good interface for the user. I think with time, it will be much better. But for now, it's not there.
It's not good enough right now. But do you believe in the concept?
Yeah, concept is great, right? I think we're just in the beginning of it. I think in 2-3 years time it will be much better.
Yeah, and you also have a lot of challenger banks like yourself. You have Monzo. You have N26. What is the most? What do you envy the most out of Monzo?
I mean, it's cute British startup.
So tell us how is Revolut different from what is the key value proposition of Revolut?
Well, we alternative to your bank account, so we give you everything what banks give to you, and we give you more, such as insurance, cryptocurrency, investments as well, very soon.
Yeah. So, what type of target group are you targeting with this type of product?
So all people who have bank accounts, they should use Revolut.
Why should they use Revolut?
Well, we are free, either 10 times cheaper or free. We have, you know, much, much better product. And then to open an account with us is just 2 minutes.
2 minutes to open an account. Does that pose any problems with compliance when the process of onboarding is so smooth?
Well, we were just smart about it, right? So even if we onboard customers in a very fast way, there are still ways to kind of, you know, identify whether you is really you. And plus, we obviously do the normal things such as rescoring of a customer and so on.
But okay, so you don't fare like the challenger banks, like Monzo.
No, not really.
No, and you don't.
Reality, they build like a local British bank. I'm not really expand. So what we're trying to build, a global financial services company. And we're doing it much faster as well.
Yeah.
So they started approximately the same time as us. Now we're in, I think 28, 29 countries. We're expanding outside of Europe very quickly and they're still in Britain.
So you have a better speed. You're faster.
Yeah. Better speed, better execution, better team, I would say.
Better team. But what type of, like in the market, what type of competitors or challenges do you see there? Nothing, or is it like,
obviously there is always competition. So I'm pretty sure new players will emerge. So when I look at Asia, there are quite a lot of, you know, established players there. US just appears to be in the beginning of the journey with a few startups being built. So I think Asia is Asia is the most advanced than Europe and then US.
Asia is most advanced.
Yeah.
So if you were to look at something interesting, you should go to Asia, not Europe.
Well, probably if you want to grab the market, you probably should go to US because there is nothing there. Then to Europe and then Asia, there are quite a few competitors.
So what do you think will be the next type of unicorn fintech product?
Next type of unicorn, well, maybe something related with open banking. When I connect, you know, multiple accounts, I also connect multiple broker and investment accounts. And then there'll be some AI telling me what to do with my money, invest or lend or borrow, and then analytics build on top of it as well.
Yeah. Revolut, you have a lot of different revenue streams, right?
Correct.
Could you just go through how you make money?
So user fees, so we have this freemium plan when there is a standard plan and there is a premium and metal plan with subscription. Then we have our business accounts, obviously we have credit, we have insurance, cryptocurrencies, and then interchange. So every time when you spend with our card, we're being paid by merchants.
Okay, do you see a problem with having so many different products?
It's actually much better.
Yeah. Yeah, why is it better?
Well, because a customer doesn't need to go through KYC process 10 times. So he just goes through once within 2 minutes and then get access to all financial products that they need.
So the access is you rate access higher than the quality of the product?
I mean, it's all together, right? Access plus quality plus price.
Okay, so how do you ensure you deliver the best type of products in so many different areas?
Well, we just make sure it's either free or, I don't know, at least 50% cheaper compared to banks.
Yeah. So you're good at upselling, right? Is that your secret? That you could use your distribution to get people onto different type of products?
Yeah, so secret is we give people amazing product for free and then we upsell high margin products.
Yeah. And what do you think about, for example, in Norway, we have a bank now that is going to launch a mobile first bank. Like a traditional bank launching a mobile first bank.
It's because 2018, right?
Yes. But they've been inspired by Monzo. Okay. And what do you think? Do you think that will succeed? And why wouldn't it succeed?
So we saw a couple of attempts, for example, in UK, being done by HSBC and then Barclays, launching mobile-only banks and RBS as well. I mean, they didn't really get traction.
They didn't get traction? Why not? What do you think is the structural problem there?
Well, it's just because McKinsey advised to build it, and then, you know, they outsourced it. 3 years later, it's delivered. It's too late, and it's not that good.
Yeah, so it's not actually part of their core deliverance. Yeah. It's something they hire outside people to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. I don't know. Do we have a microphone for some questions? So what we're going to do? We're going to do some questions now about banks, and then I'm going to move on. So any questions about the banks and the future of banks to Nick? No one? Yeah, that's one.
My question is, why would we need banks in the future? Is there a place for banks?
Do banks have any business in the future?
I mean, banking business is very simple, right? So they take deposits and then they lend money out. Right, so I think this business will exist for another, I don't know, few hundred years. But I think, you know, apart from taking deposits and lending, they do a lot of things, such as payments, investments, trading. They just sit on top of this business model. So in the future, not necessarily banks will have these other businesses.
Just a follow-up. Isn't that an algorithmic transaction?
For trading, I mean, that can be, I don't know, retail trading, institutional trading.
Money lending.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. So there are like many, many businesses which banks do, which are not necessarily their core or business model. Core business model is simply taking deposits and lending money.
Any other questions?
Hello. Good morning. I'm just wondering how you will deal with the compliance issues. I mean, in terms of, you know, transferring money outside, like overseas payments. Now, I think you have been asked about compliance, but I was not catching up. Thank you.
Yeah, compliance is a very hot topic for banks and fintechs. So the way we approach it, first, we approached it in a traditional way. So we hired tons of traditional compliance people with AML background, banking background. And reality, what I recognize with time, so it is possible to completely automate compliance, build models, transactional monitoring models, KYC models, anti-fraud models, and then effectively have automated system without any human involvement. So I think actually compliance is very technology-based business. And then, you know, It used to be done in a traditional way with like thousands of compliance people looking at transactions, looking at alerts. I think in 2-3 years time, this profession will not exist. It will be just, you know, models. Models looking at transactions, as simple as that.
Yes. You've copied the traditional banks in the fact that you cater to both business and consumer banking. Do you think that's right? And which market do you think is the most profitable for you in the future?
Well, good question. I mean, it's difficult to say, right? So right now, the most profitable for us is probably UK and France. Maybe in the future, there will be shift to US, maybe to Asia. But generally, the most profitable markets are where there is least competition.
What the difference between consumer and business? What are the
okay? I mean, business is obviously much higher margin products, so and then they also borrow much more money compared to retail, and they also do a lot of transactions. So right now, our revenue is probably 80-20% retail versus business. I think in the future it can be the opposite. So 80% of revenue will come from business.
Hi. Like most disruptors, it seems like Revolut executes really well and really quickly. And I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about your development, how you prioritize functionality, do you work with customers, how you make decisions on what to build?
Sure. So the way we're structured, we usually run, I would say, 40-50 development teams. Team consists of probably 4 to 5 to 6 people. So one designer, one or two backend developers, one iOS developer, one Android developer, and one product owner. So they're effectively like a mini startup, right? So they decide themselves what to build within their own area. Can be either payments or retail core or business core. So we've got like, you know, I would say about 40 teams like this. Some of them are concentrated on consumer facing products. Some of them are concentrated on our internal products. For example, compliance is an internal product. And within their scope, they do decisions themselves. So the way we work, we give them targets, KPIs. So KPIs usually numbers that you need to achieve within the next 6 months. They present with a roadmap, and we just, you know, double check whether the roadmap makes sense. And then we have for 6 months, this 40 or 50 teams, you know, just running and delivering.
So do the teams decide themselves what to work on within some constraint?
Yes. So they decide, we do quality control.
Okay. Is it like the two pizza team from Amazon?
Yeah, exactly. Is that five, six people max.
Five, six people max.
Yeah.
And what is good about this type of structure?
Well, it's very important for a team to be independent of other teams. Otherwise, there are always bottlenecks. So we view it as we provide infrastructure. Then we have 40 startups working on this infrastructure, and these startups almost never intersect. Yeah. Almost never, kind of.
So they're totally independent. So they can actually produce whatever they need without dependencies from from other teams.
Yeah.
You think that is that crucial?
Yeah.
To be able to execute.
Yeah, of course.
And then you have KPIs. What type of KPIs do you set for the team? Or do you set the KPIs, or does the team do that?
Usually this comes from top to bottom, yeah. So, I mean, types of KPIs can be, okay, for next 6 months, we need to increase activation, say, from 75% to 90%. We need to increase our cohorts from long-term cohorts from 40% to 50%. So these kind of things. So we give them numbers, and then they come up with ways to issue them.
So is that what you meant about the product organization versus a traditional bank?
Yeah, traditional bank is, okay, you've got board of directors consisting of directors from shareholders, right? Then you have, you know, management team with extremely high compensation packages who don't take risks, right? And then under them, there are managers. And then somewhere like on the level number 8 or 9, there are like, you know, some poor one engineer who does all the job, right?
So, what's the if you have an idea in Revolut, what's the time frame from having the idea to actually have a product out and tested?
Depends on the complexity, but usually we do it within 2 to 3 months.
2 to 3 months from idea to
actually, yes, production.
Okay, can you name some of the products you have that have been successful in this process? Because obviously you have products that are not successful as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the recent products that we launched, Waltz, took us, I would say, 3 months. And the way it works, so every time when I spend with a card, we round up transaction and it goes to your special Waltz account for your, I don't know, savings purposes. So it took 3 months. It's very successful. A lot of people are using it. And the example of unsuccessful products, so two years ago, we launched a product called Offers. So we simply gave, I don't know, a lot of offers to customers. And then it wasn't very successful. It wasn't very used.
How do you deal with failure inside the organization?
I mean, we dig deep to understand whether the failure is coming from, I don't know, market. So people just don't need this product, or it's coming from bad execution. Right? If it's coming from market, it's fine. So we just, you know, redistribute team to other products. If it's coming from execution, so we obviously learn what we've done, what we can do, you know, better.
Yeah, so it's not like you, if you have some failures, it's not like you are considered a bad person in Revolut. Because that's probably a lot of incumbent companies. You don't want to have too many failures.
I mean, we're okay with failures, right? So as soon as it's coming from market, not from execution, we're fine.
Okay. Any more questions?
Hi. What qualities do you look for in your leadership team?
Well, good question. To be honest with you, our culture is we hire people who are extremely, I would say, hyperlogical, so understand where reality is. And these people are usually very technical, so they have, you know, technical background. Secondly, we hire people who are extremely ambitious, so they work very hard. And then number three, we hire people who are not political, right? So because if you look at banks, their big problem, a lot of people are extremely political. So instead of, you know, doing a real job, they kind of, you know, play politics all the time. And it's very dangerous for organization. So that's very simple how we like, you know, interview and hire.
What's your onboarding interview process look like? How does it look like?
Oh, it's pretty standardized. So we have, you know, sources who approach people on LinkedIn, and then, you know, try to get them to the interview. Then we have screening call done by recruiters. Then first interview done by effectively business or developers or designers. Then we always do home task because the best predictability of how successful a person will be at the job is actually home task. And then second interview, final interview, and then we give an offer. So usually the whole process takes from 20 to 30 days.
Me or him? Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll ask the question and I'll get back to you. Nick, can you please tell us how do you interact with the customers? Do you prototype before you launch a feature, or do you launch a feature and then gather feedback?
So I would say we quickly do something like a beta, right, and then we distribute it to our team and then to 1,000 people. Then we gather feedback, we change, and then we launch to 1% of all users that we have, then to 10%, then to 100%.
Thank you.
Hi, a question is about your growth. Because if you are here today, it's a good deal of it is because of the amazing growth that you have had. Yeah. And probably a lot of your valuation is also based on that. So I would like to know, can you pinpoint one factor that has made your growth so amazing? Is it because the product was fantastic? I mean, the word of mouth? What was it that really has characterized the growth and given you the growth that you experienced?
So I think it's very simple, standard concept, right? If you build a product which is 10 times better and 10 times cheaper compared to competition, so then people will talk about it and then they will sell it to their friends, their family. So that's what we achieved. So we build a product which is 10 times better and 10 times cheaper or either free, right? So as a result, like people talk about it and we don't need to spend money on marketing.
So it's just to build a product that's 10 times better. So, and then, yeah.
Hi, I'm Kala. I'm really impressed with Revolut. We are one of the world's smallest but best savings teams in the world. We build a social network to connect people and their savings here from Norway. What I've listened to you say before is that you build everything in-house. And for us as a small tech company, we'd like to experiment looking at how we can actually work together, connect to Revolut and the extreme growth that you're having. Is everything internal, or will you cooperate with tech companies like our company, for instance?
I mean, obviously it depends on the systems that we use. If these systems are our core, right? For example, onboarding, banking system or payment system, then we always try to build in the house. If it is some, system that we use for internal chat, like Slack, so it's not going to build Slack in-house, right? So it's we do what makes sense.
Thanks.
Right. Looking at many of the challenger banks out there, some of them go for a strategy with a full banking license, and others decide not to and partner with a banking as a service platform. What decides or what influences whether one choice is right or the other one? And how did you go about determining your choice?
So our strategy is always try to launch faster, right? And if to launch faster means we partner with the bank, we always choose to partner with the bank. For example, expansion team. When we expand to a new country, we always look at, okay, can we get our license? If license take more than 9 months to get, we then look for partner bank, right? So the key is always speed to market. And then when we kind of, you know, launch with a partner bank, then we can, you know, look at license to bring it in-house.
How does a partnership with the bank look like?
A lot of meetings first, then...
and that's faster.
Yeah. So it takes usually 6 months to get that. And then you fill a lot of documents, right, manually, right, opening some accounts. Then then hopefully you meet some senior people at the bank who will push partnership, you know, much faster. And then hopefully, yeah, you launch it eventually. But it takes time.
What type of value do you provide to the bank?
Well, it's just P&L, right? So we have revenue share. So, well, either revenue share, we just pay fixed fee per transaction.
Yep.
Hi. You've been talking a little bit about your roadmap and your speed and agility and a little bit about your user engagement. And my question is, how do you determine what new type of business functionalities or business concepts that actually go into the roadmap? What is the decision-making process that validates that what you're creating is the right thing for the market?
Well, we don't do, like, you know, 1 year research, right? It's more like, I don't know how to say it. It's like, you know, things that, you know, make sense, right? For example, when we look at our business product, we always prioritize things that make sense for us as a business, right? Because we also, like, need to have payroll. We need to pay people. We need to execute transactions. We need to do bulk payments. And then we just come to our CFO and ask, okay, what are you experiencing trouble with? He tells us, and then we build it. The same for retail consumer product. So, okay, what do I need as a user, right? As a normal user. And then it's just, you know, common sense. Yeah, I know it's a bit vague answer, but it is how we work.
But the team that's, you have 40 teams?
Yeah.
And when is the team done with the product and starting with a new product? Are they ever done, or do they own the product then?
So they just own the product, and then they are tasked to improve it all the time. So sometimes we shift teams to new products, but that's more like an exception.
Morning. Could you say something about your plans for developing the business offering going forward?
My view, business offering, well, at the moment, current business offering that banks do are a bit broken because first you need to open a business account, then you need to open a merchant account with Stripe or Adyen, for example. And then, you know, it just takes time, 2-3 weeks. So our business product, you simply apply online, and then within 5 minutes, you can get a business bank account, which gives you, for example, connectivity with your apps that you use, like Slack or your HR system, your payroll system. Plus, on top of it, we're going to release credit, so you as a business can borrow money from us. On top of it, with the business bank account, you'll have acquiring account as well. So within 5 minutes, you can have, you know, acquiring accounts, same as Stripe do. And then it is, you know, complete package that business want, right? Because that's it. Like, you know, all products that business want, they are in one product.
Do you build all the products yourself, or can you use APIs from other type of products to deliver to your customers?
Yeah, for example, trading that we're building now, commission-free trading. We partnered with one of the big brokers who have access to exchanges. And because for us to get access to exchange, then, you know, to integrate with each of them will take, I don't know, 2 years. We decided to partner and then, you know, get the product done within 5 months. So we obviously use their APIs.
So I have a question about the type of card that you're issuing. As far as I've understood, I haven't actually used Revolut card, so please correct me. But as far as I've understood, it's a prepaid card, which means that people need to top it up right before they can actually use it. If that's true, why haven't you gone for a credit card? And is there a reason for choosing prepaid over credit? Because credit is the standard here, or at least for business.
The way our product works, yes, you can add money there, right? It's like a normal bank account, right? So you have a card, you have account, you can spend if you have money in the account, and you can also enable credit in the account, right? And then you can spend as well. So it's effectively a card can be both debit and credit.
Hi, great product. Just curious about your fundraising. Do you have any kind of particular strategies and, you know, which investors you get on board and what are your like next milestones in terms of raising money?
Well, raising money is a very interesting story, I would say. So it's like, it's very difficult in the beginning and it's very easy, like going forward, right? I remember like when we first raised money, 2 or 3 years ago, it was very difficult. I spent like, 4 months, going pitching investors. Okay. So we raised like, £1.5 million within 4 months. And then next round was, I think it was 10 million within 2 months. And then all subsequent rounds, so the larger they were, I didn't even go out to meet them with investors. They were just, knocking and then, giving you money. So,
so how do you choose investor?
Based on price. No, obviously you do due diligence as well, so you speak with other founders, right, and just to get references. But usually there are not that many, good VCs in the world, so you all know them.
Yes, hello, Hans Christian from The Factory. We work with early stage fintech startups here in Norway and the Nordics. What did you do in your first year operation? Can you explain a bit in how to get started right? What did you do?
I think I made every single mistake that I could make. Probably my advantage was that I kind of, made it and, tried something new, then something new. So iterated, very, very quickly. So I think for first 2 years, you just, make so many mistakes and then, you just don't need to give up. And then hopefully, you find your way.
So what are the biggest challenges for startups in the fintech space today?
Well, first to open a bank account, I would say. So every time when the bank hears that you are fintech, right, they kind of, I'm not going to onboard you. That was a real hassle for us to open our first bank account.
So that's the biggest challenge?
In the beginning, yes.
In the beginning, and then onward?
And then every 3 months, there are new challenges. So first you need to get, good designers, good development team. Okay, if you find good people, then you release a product. Then you need to make sure that people know about you. So you start selling the product. Then as your business scales, you encounter a lot of issues such as quality of your support, right? And then sooner or later you'll encounter problems with compliance and then, with banks. This is the usual things. Every problem that you can face will eventually kind of, come to you.
And what was the best advice given to you when you started your business?
What was the best advice given to me?
Now, looking at it retrospectively, what was the best advice?
I think being not emotional, right, and just looking at any new problem, like from intellectual curiosity point of view, how can I solve it, instead of being emotional about it.
Just a quick follow-up on what you said. You did a lot of iterations, a lot of mistakes in the first year or two. Can you point to sort of a breakthrough point or some specific things you did right and that really turned into building this great success, please?
Maybe the answer is I was lucky. that's the best advantage that you can get, right? I mean, reality sometimes... luck is very important. So luck to get the right person or luck to get in the right direction or to jump on the right trend as well. So this is, I think it's very important as well. So the faster you iterate, the more probability you'll get on this lucky wave that will kind of, push you forward.
Hello. Would you say something about your customers and what do you know about them and how do you collect the intelligence about your customers?
So we've got a data scientist team, which kind of, pulls a lot of information about our customers, where they come from, age, what transactions they make. But I think now we are still not at the stage when we are utilizing this information well. I think maybe in a few years' time we can be much smarter about it. We already do a lot of things, like, for example, cross-selling different products based on your behavior. But I think we're just, in the beginning of it.
question here.
So a number of VCs often warn businesses against or early startups against using crowdfunding as a way of raising initial rounds. You'd used a Crowdcube early in 2015. What's your experience with that, and why did you do it, and how is that affecting your later rounds?
So we view crowdfunding not as a way to raise money, but as a great marketing channel, right? Because if you have like one VC investor, and then compared to 10,000 retail investors who put, I don't know, £100 each. Mm-hmm. So second is much more powerful because these 10,000 people, they will sell your product to other people, to their families, to friends. They're effectively like a marketing machine. So they are ambassadors who are investors as well. So that's why we did it actually twice.
Thanks.
So is that something B2C companies should do? More than B2B? Like... Does it make the same much sense in B2B, right? Or
yeah, B2C, obviously, I think you must do it, right? As a startup, B2B, I mean, really depend on the product. So if it is a mass product for many SMEs, like thousands and thousands, then yes, Crowdcube or Seeders make sense. If it is more like, you know, sales to corporate world, so you do, I don't know, 2, 3, 5 sales a year, then probably no.
Profitability. On the retail side, everything is going down to zero, so it's harder to make money on that side. As you mentioned, the business side is a little bit better because you have higher margin and congratulations to your success, but on the profitability, how is your developing in that area?
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, when someone will ask me this question. No, in reality, I think profitability is all about volume that you have and your costs, right? So I still think that, you know, there are, you know, tons of ways how you can make money on retail clients. So Crate is one of them, right? Yes, obviously, like, you know, interchange is very small in Europe. I think the biggest struggles banks have with retail clients is that cost of acquisition is very high. But because we built a great product, so our cost of acquisition is zero effectively, right? So for us, it's still like, you know, profitable business. So because we don't spend money on marketing.
Hi, in the past 5 years, you went from being a trader in a bank to running a startup in this new space. Can you tell us a bit about the learning curve? Was it a lot of stuff to digest, a lot of stuff to learn, to work with developers, or was it easy?
No, it's obviously difficult, right? So I don't think my skill set as a trader is transferable to be a skill set as working in startup, because it's like in startup you need a completely different skill set. So yeah, it was difficult to learn, but that's my point. So you need to kind of, you know, iterate all the time, and then you learn a lot of things.
So what is your best skill set? What are you good at?
What I'm good at? Well, setting targets and achieving them.
Then what are you bad at?
What I'm bad at, sometimes I have too straightforward, I would say.
Too straightforward?
Yeah.
You haven't been too much straightforward today.
Well, but I learned as well.
So, if we were to put you in charge of the biggest bank in Norway, and you had to do three things, what would that be?
Oh, good question. I won't be able to do it once here. It's it's so, like, you know, putting like myself in a bank and then, you know, trying to change the course of a bank will mean, like, I don't know, firing a lot of people, changing a lot of processes, and then it won't be a very popular decision, right? So that's why I won't do it.
So, and what is your best advice to banks?
My best.
Quit your job.
Keep doing what you do.
Nick, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And good luck with the Revolut Bank. And thank you to all of you and all of the questions. And have a very nice Friday and then weekend.
Thank you.